everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I'm Andy Warren, and I'm joined by a man who really wishes he'd joined our new Fans Jury Predictions League. That's Stuart Watson.
Hello, yeah.
You've done all right with your predictions, Stu, but you opted out of our new Fans Jury, launched this week. You'd have had two from two, wouldn't you?
Well. Yes, I would, Andy. Yes, I would. Thank you for putting that out there. But no, not alone. I think two of our correspondents have also called to correct results from two games so far. So well done to Benjamin Bloom.
Benjamin Bloom and Alistair Rattray.
Well done to those two, both leading the way with a perfect 6-point start. So, good stuff, guys. Yeah.
Sadly, you don't make the predictions league table, Stu, but your predictions do go in the paper. And I've got to say, Stu would be two from two as well, but he opted out of being in the table. Your loss, my friend.
Well, I take no pleasure in getting them right, given what the results have been, 1-1 at Bolton and 1-0 to Wolves on Saturday. But unfortunately, there is a sense of predictability about Ipswich Town at the moment, which I'm sure we will discuss in due course.
Yeah, the latest of those predictions that the three of you, and I'm sure many others, got right was Ipswich Town 0, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1. Ipswich beaten at home by the leaders and comfortably beating Stu. I think 1-0 was probably the absolute bare minimum of a victory that Wolves deserve. We've got Bart to thank for keeping that score down on a day when Ipswich were outclassed by a team that they're on their way to the Premier League, aren't they?
Yeah, champions in waiting, and I think they'll cope in the Premier League, no doubt about it. For me, very impressed with Wolves. I think they looked, you know, for all the talk about the millions of pounds that they've spent, they've got star quality, but they've also got organisation, cohesion, a team spirit about them. So full credit to them. I thought it was more about Wolves being good than Ipswich being poor on Saturday. Actually, I've seen Ipswich play a lot worse than they did on Saturday. I thought the first half was a reasonable performance from Ipswich. At least they showed a bit of spirit. They got about them. Okay, at times it's a bit huff and puff from Ipswich, but Mick McCarthy's right in that they do give everything for the shirt. At least they had a few shots on goal, which has been lacking of late. And if they produce that performance, certainly the first half performance, if they replicate that in the next couple of games against Sunderland away and Burton at home, I'm sure they will at least win one of those games. But Wolves, yeah, golfing class, just too good, really. And if it wasn't for Bart, as you rightly say, I think six very good saves in that game, the scoreline would have been greater.
We'll just hear from Mick quickly now. Mick, no complaints over this one, was there, Stu? He was gracious enough to see what everybody else saw and a comfortable win. We'll just hear from Mick now.
I'm always disappointed when we lose, of course. But I can't really argue with the result. I was disappointed we conceded. We had possession twice and gave it away and ends up in our net, which shouldn't have done. But Bart's made some good saves and they had a very good side. We were beaten by a better team, but I can't argue with my lads or complain at them for the effort and application they give. Could we be better at times? Quality with the ball? Yeah, but they give me and they give this club everything every week, so I'll settle for that. The goal knocks the stuff in there, and then it enables Wolves to play. It's very hard to get round them. They've got five at the back when they want five at the back. They drop two in and the two wide players drop in. It's hard to play through them. By the way, they're a very good side as well. And they make it very hard, and it's a bit of parasite football, and they can play and prey on our mistakes, feed on our mistakes. And I don't blame them for it. They're very good at it, and when they break, they've got quality. But I have no complaint with my lads, the way they perform now.
That's twice in, a little over a month they've played the league leaders, and twice they've lost 1-0. Fine margins, but Wolves, do you think Wolves had other gears? They're more gears to find for Wolves, aren't there, from what we've seen in those two games?
Yeah, the thing that's impressed me most about them is that they've found different ways to win football matches during the sort of the gruelling championship season. I think in those early summer months, they were blowing people away with the star quality that they've got in an attacking sense. And then come the sort of cold, dark winter months, they've found ways to win games 1-0. I don't know how many games they've won 1-0, but obviously they've beaten Ipswich by that scoreline twice. I think there's been several more games that they've won by that scoreline. So everyone seemed to know their roles. They had defined roles in the team, and they left no gaps, they left no space, and Ipswich just couldn't find any way through. They've got this kind of 3-4-3 system, so it can be very attack-minded when they need it to, but once they've got their noses in front, the two wing-backs drop in, it becomes a back five. And yet they kind of always maintain that counter-threat. And as you say, there was always a sense that in 2-3 incisive passes, they could flip up a gear and score a killer second. Mm. So Saturday's just one of these that we have to kind of park and move on from. It's not really one that we can overanalyze from an Ipswich Town point of view. I think there were some positives to take from it, certainly a lot more positives to take from that defeat than there was from the 1-1 draw at Bolton away the previous weekend, I would say.
Yeah, obviously Bart's performance and the new contract which came before it, a massive positive. But Stephen Gleeson again looked a decent acquisition. Not quite 90 minutes, 85 odd. This time he moves the ball well, he holds on to the ball well, and he wants the ball. There's a player there that could certainly do a job for Ipswich longer than the 4-month deal that he's on now.
Yeah, very good chance of staying on. Again, it all hinges around what happens in the summer with the manager and what have you. But he's been he looks like a classic sort of Mick point to prove type player who's been out in the cold at Birmingham, but an experienced player at League One level with MK Dons and then also with Birmingham up until this season. Birmingham fans seem to be a little bit perplexed as to why he's not had game time and why he's been let go. I think he's only had a handful of appearances this season, but by all accounts was one of their better players in those games, and he's hit the ground running at Ipswich. I thought he was, Mick said he was a mile above everybody else when he came on at half time for the injured Cole Skews at Bolton, and I thought he carried that performance into Saturday's game against Wolves. You're right, he wants the ball, which, for a long, long time has been Ipswich's, I think, downfall in having a midfielder who demands it off the back four. He wants to get it, turn and play positively, play forwards. And he's got a bit of fire in his belly as well. There was that fantastic crunching tackle on Neves in the first half, which was never a foul, let alone booking. Mick McCarthy rightly said we may as well pack it all in and go home if we're going to start outlawing tackles like that. So I like what I've seen from Stephen Gleeson, and as you say, there's a good chance that something more may be done with him in the summer if he carries on in that vein.
But he's one of a handful of incomings that have already been completed. We're obviously moving now towards Wednesday's transfer deadline day, an equally cringeworthy and exciting day in the footballing calendar, but it sounds as if it's going to be a reasonably quiet one for Ipswich, especially in terms of incomings. We'll just hear Mick's thoughts on that first before we get into transfer deadline day.
No, I don't think so.
No.
We're getting some players back from injury, which is good, as we saw. Grant Ward came on and did well. Webbo's coming back. We're getting a few players back from injury, so Luke Iam came on. That's going to help us.
Did you mean in and out, Mick, or were you just talking about bringing players in? Could there be activity the other way around, players going out?
Unlikely. I don't know. You never know, do you? Somebody pops up at the last minute and we wait and see. I can't really afford to lose anybody.
Yeah. So yeah, not expecting an awful lot to be walking through the Golden Gates at Portman Road.
The Golden Gates that Mick may be walking out of hand in hand with David McGoldrick come the end of the season. I guess we'll talk about that more later on. But no, Mick's now said three times to us that there'll be no further incoming deals before 11 p.m. on Wednesday. For me, I think they're short in terms of an attacking sense. Okay, Carter Vickers, was needed with at the back with Tommy Smith moving on. Gleeson, who we've discussed, has come in and has been a, you know, will cover for that injury hit midfield. But further forward, the goals have dried up of late. I think they've scored four in the last eight games. Not been creating too many chances in there. I think Waghorn's gone 10 games without a goal now.
10 games now.
I thought Garner was looking a little bit isolated at the weekend. And Mick himself has said you can't keep flogging Garner game after game with the physical way that he approaches games. McGoldrick, will he stay, will he go? We'll move on to that in a minute, but he hasn't got a defined role in the team at the moment. Wasted wide right at the weekend. Selina, hot and cold at times. You know, he's looked a threat. Of course he has, but you know, you can't keep playing those four week after week. And I thought it was evident, you know, when they were 1-0 down, that I guess Mick was looking over his shoulder on Saturday and thinking, I haven't got any game changers here. What am I going to do to change this? And he said afterwards, all my goal scorers were on the pitch. I mean, what were his options? Luke Hyam's not going to be someone who comes on and changes the game in a positive sense. Kevin Brew transfer listed. He may well depart before the deadline. Freddie Sears.
285 days without a goal.
Is that right?
That's a long time.
We've spoken about him many times, but clearly confidence shot. And it's been a long time since he's scored or looked like scoring. For me, I think certainly in wide areas they need a bit, you know, some more plan B options to freshen things up in an attacking sense. They looked more balanced when Grant Ward was and Selina were sort of the wide players. Ward's obviously had an injury recently, and makes it perhaps a little bit more perplexing why Danny Rowe's currently out on loan at Lincoln, because I thought there were encouraging signs from him towards the back end of last season. Ipswich paid $100,000 to sign him from Macclesfield, so you know, that's a significant amount in Ipswich Town terms in recent years. And likewise, Kiefer Moore being sold. Okay, good money. We've discussed this before in terms of, you know, fantastic money, which can be reinvested in the summer. But I just wonder whether, you know, he might have had a role to play as well. But there you go.
Well, you talk about Mick saying he thinks he can't flog Joe Garner every week, but he is. He's flogged him every week bar two games, I think he's missed.
He's got no choice.
There's no choice. What do? You play. You either flog this guy every week, or you put Martin Waghorn up there and leave a hole elsewhere on the pitch. There's no real choice.
Well, that would have, you know, Waghorn played really well as the number nine when Garner had those two or three games out with a foot injury.
Derby in particular, he looked very good.
Yeah, and then was it the Forest game as well? And, you know, they won two games. That's the last time Ipswich were stringing some results together, was when Garner was out the team and Waghorn was spearheading the attack. And I think that would give the opportunity for McGoldrick to play in his proper position centrally as a number 10. But then who do you play wide right? There is no other option there at the moment. It would be Freddie Sears, who, you know, just hasn't done it for some time now. Beyond that, there's no other option. So, you know, I did ask Mick if he felt that was an area his squad was light in, and got pretty short shrift on that in the last press conference. So I think, you know, that will be an area of the squad that they will need to look at come the summer for sure.
Yeah, you mentioned David McGoldrick's position there, and that was really in evidence yesterday, Saturday, wasn't it? I think you posted a picture on Twitter which showed him in a right back, and not a right wing back role. That was a right back role. He spent a lot of time by his own corner flag. To be fair to him, he chased back and did make a couple of decent interceptions, but he's lost in that role. That's not a role for David McGoldrick.
No, and I think if you speak to Nottingham Forest fans, David McGoldrick was at Forest at a time when they seemed to be stockpiling strikers, and I think that's why his Forest career never really took off, because he often found himself playing wide right there. He's obviously rejuvenated his career at Ipswich in, you know, almost having a team built around him, and you know, that was when he was at his pomp playing just off of a striker and all the rest of it. It's another example of round pegs in square holes, which, if you go back to one of Mick's earliest press conferences, he said one of the first things he would do as manager is play people in their proper positions, and Carlos Edwards got moved forward from that right back role that he played in so often under Paul Jewell, and got moved to a right winger, and Mick was sort of adamant in saying it's not rocket science, you play players in their best position. Fast forward 5 years and you could reel off a whole list of players that have been played out of position. I mean, just to go back on that one, Daryl Murphy was played left wing by Paul Jewell, wasn't he? And Mick converted him into a number nine. So that was something that Mick did in his early stages of his Ipswich Town managerial career, was put players in their right slots. And in the last couple of years, that's been one of his biggest downfalls. It seems to be that he kind of picks his best 11 in his mind and then tries to get them into a system. And the issue he's got is that both Waghorn and McGoldrick want to play number 10. Neither of them want to play wide right, and it's been evident that neither can really play there, because I thought earlier in the season, Waghorn, when he played wide right, I thought it left Ipswich very vulnerable. Jordan Spence and Dominic Iorfa both were the scapegoats for a while. A lot of goals were being conceded down that right-hand side, and it kind of got overlooked that perhaps Waghorn wasn't giving them the protection that was needed in front of them. So I think that was what sparked Waghorn being moved inside. And McGoldrick perhaps is a little bit more defensively diligent. You're right, at the weekend, at least he did sort of stay disciplined to that role, and he did what clearly was asked of him, which was keep an eye on Barry Douglas, their attack-minded left wing-back who weighs in with plenty of assists. But talk about not playing to his strengths. I mean, you know, he tried to do that role, but it's not natural to him, and he did switch off for the goal. It was Douglas that he allowed the runner, Douglas, to get beyond him and stand up the cross from which they scored. His body language hasn't looked good to me for a little while, McGoldrick. I think he's probably a little bit fed up of not having a defined role in this team. I think he's at times has felt that he's carried the burden of responsibility for wanting the ball and making things happen. He said before in some of his interviews with us that he feels that his teammates all look to him to be the one to do, make things happen. I think to me it seems now it's a question of when, not if, he departs, possibly before the deadline on Wednesday. If not, I can see him walking away on a Bosman come the end of the season.
I think it's nearly a quarter of the Championship have been linked with David McGoldrick over the last 3 weeks, and if any of them were watching yesterday's game, and I'm sure they will, they wouldn't have left particularly any wiser on the player that they're trying to sign, would they? I wouldn't have thought you're not signing David McGoldrick to play on the right wing, you're signing him to play behind.
And somebody like Neil Warnock will know that, and I could imagine that he would probably be feeling, I can get something different out of this player here. I mean, Neil Warnock, we're talking about Cardiff because they're the ones that have been linked longest to David McGoldrick. It makes sense for someone like them to go for him. If they can get him for a cut price fee now, you know, talking of figures of about 500 grand have been knocked around. You know, if he can make the difference between them going up and not, you know, that pays for it. That's loose change in terms of what you get for Premier League. Warnock gets spoken about as being this defensive, old school manager, but you know, he always has one or two flair players who are given the freedom to express themselves in his side. You know, I remember speaking to Darren Ambrose and him saying how Warnock was his favourite manager to play under because he told him not to track back. He told him to concentrate on his attacking game, and I think he scored 20-odd goals for Palace under Warnock's management. So I could see Warnock almost doing the same thing with McGoldrick, just sort of saying, you know, go and play your game. And I think he's that type of player that you almost need to give that freedom to express himself.
Takes one goal, doesn't it? One match-winning goal, and that investment is correct for Cardiff. Mm-hmm. I think Bournemouth did it slightly more money, I think, but with Kenwyn Jones,
yeah.
All it needs, one result, and your money. We're saying £500,000 because that's been mentioned in various national reports. It's worth it because look at the promised land that you're taking yourself into.
Mm. I think from an Ipswich Town perspective as well, you know, David McGoldrick's going to be looking for the last big contract of his career, having just turned 30. He'll be looking for probably the security of a 3-year deal for his family and everything. If you're Ipswich Town, do you want to be giving, you know, putting a big proportion of your of a limited wage bill in, into David McGoldrick when he's had two very injury-hit careers? Yes, on his day he can be one of the best to watch in the Championship, but consistency has been an issue. I think his decision making at times, for all his ability, can be questioned. So all things considered, you know, it might be best for all parties that, that he seeks a fresh challenge and Ipswich look for somebody who can invest those funds into another area that's probably of bigger priority.
Well, Mick said that himself a couple of weeks ago, didn't he, that that's a scenario that, that could benefit Ipswich in the long term. Kevin Brew, another one. We sound like we've been talking about the departure of Kevin Brew forever. This is a man that was told in the summer he could leave. He's still here, despite interest from all over Europe, it seems. He could very well end up spending the season at Ipswich before leaving on a free when his contract expires.
He might do. I guess the central midfield situation is starting to clear up a little bit more now with Luke Hyam back, who I think looks encouraging signs, actually, in the few substitute appearances he's had since returning from that long-term injury. I think if an offer comes in, they'll probably let him go. That was the one question mark for me at the weekend. Why was Kevin Brew on the bench instead of Aaron Drynan or Ben Morris, or, you know, a young striker who could have, you know, is he better than what are they better than any of the players that Ipswich have got at the moment? No, but the crowd and who knows what that could have led to. But
it's pretty puzzling. We've not seen him for a minute. Yeah, isn't it? He's been here so long. They know what he's about. They've talked him up.
Mm.
We've not seen there's been opportunities to put him on the field. Not, you know, mainly that FA Cup defeat to Sheffield United. Absolutely nothing to lose in putting him on then. And he wasn't even on the bench this weekend. It's a bit of a strange.
We can only go on what people have told us. Obviously, we've not seen him play.
He has scored a goal in for the under-23s.
Yeah, but, you know, Mick's talked him up. Luke Chambers has talked him up, saying how good he's looked in training. He, you know, he's been in the club for a few months now, obviously waiting for that sort of FIFA red tape issue. Sometimes it's tapping into what's going to lift the crowd, and then if that had lifted the crowd, it might have lifted the players a little bit. Waiting till the 83rd minute before making a triple substitution, you know, wasn't going to get anybody going, was it? But that said, Grant Ward clearly isn't, you know, he's well short of match fitness, having had a torn groin recently. So, and I guess, you know, the counter argument Mick would say is that he needed two central midfielders on the bench in Hyam and Brew, because Gleeson's had very little game time this season, and he obviously didn't think he was going to last as long as he did. And Connolly had come off with a knock in the latter stages at Bolton as well, so that would probably be, when Mick was trying to pick his seven-man bench, that was probably the safety-first thinking in that respect.
Stu, I'm going to stop the transfer chat here, and just to play you a little bit of music, I want to know what instantly comes to mind when I play you this music. We can hear it going over the top now. What comes to mind?
This is about Tommy Smith, isn't it?
It's about Tommy Smith, Stu. Very sad. I feel sad.
That's hit you in the feels, this one,
yeah,
hasn't it?
Yeah, I feel sad. I feel sad to see such a long-serving player depart mid-season. You know, it's a connection for a lot of people that would have seen him kind of from a teenager mature into a battle-hardened Championship centre-half. Like, we're not saying goodbye to an elite level centre half, but he's a very solid football player who has given his all for Ipswich. It's perhaps underrated, has some real ability and a real connection to Ipswich. It's just made me feel sad, Stu. The whole thing.
A rarity in the modern game, 10, you know, homegrown player, 10 years at the club. You're right, I think we shouldn't let sentiment cloud our judgment too much. Tommy Smith has had a sort of an interesting journey at Ipswich Town. I was covering Colchester United in his early breakthrough years at Ipswich, and he was loaned out to Colchester. And let me tell you, he had a few stinkers for Colchester and got hauled off at half-time in one game down at Yeovil. And I've had a joke with him about this since, and he had a very steep learning curve early on. I think in the early days, a lot of people had sort of written him off at Ipswich, his concentration levels, and was prone to the odd mistake that would lead to a goal. But you're right, he's matured, he's gained experience, and he's become a very he became Ipswich Town's Mr. Consistent. Only a couple of years back, that he was probably the pick of their defenders, would have been in my top three sort of players for the season. I can't remember which season it was now. A couple of seasons ago, maybe not the playoff year, the one after that,
yeah.
Potentially, I think. And he's made it clear, had he been a regular in the team still, he wouldn't have been itching to have this move, but he's not. There's reasons for that. He underwent major back surgery, 18 months ago, and has had limited opportunities since then. So I guess the club are thinking, you know, he's got Chambers and Webster ahead of him, which I think if you ask most fans would say that is probably the best centre-half pairing. He wants games. Ipswich have got question marks over his long-term fitness. So all in all, it's added up to this move to Colorado Rapids, and good luck to him. It's a great lifestyle opportunity. The MLS is, you know, is improving year on year. Colorado seem like a club with lofty ambitions and a bit of backing behind them. So he goes with everyone's best wishes, and as he says, he'll be back one day, hopefully in some capacity.
It sounds like he's got a few dinner invites already. I was listening to I think it was Avalanche FM, it was called, which is quite ominous if you're living in the Rocky Mountains. But the excitable American radio host on there has invited him out for dinner as soon as he lands. So I'm sure that will be happening. Sounds fun though.
Yeah, no, it'll be a great little adventure for him and his wife. They'll football is a chance for him to do a bit of travelling, as you know, and see a different part of the world, and the number of people that sort of turned out to wish him well in the fan zone yesterday sort of speaks volumes of how he's thought of by Ipswich Town fans. So good luck to him. It's another sort of, we're talking about Dave McGoldrick potentially leaving, Cole Skuse potentially out of contract in the summer, Darryl Murphy's moved on. It feels a very much like a changing of the guard at Ipswich Town, isn't it? Some lengthy stalwarts all starting to move on.
Well, that very neatly, Stu, excellent work, moves us on to Mick's future, which is probably the overarching story over everything we've talked about today. This is the issue that overarches all of that. We've had another insight into Mick's thought process, perhaps his thinking regarding his future. You spoke to him, you asked the questions on Friday. I'm sure many of you have seen the video and read the transcript of what was said there. What did you make of that exchange where Mick again voluntarily hinted at a summer departure before clamming up?
I guess this is my chance to kind of explain to people the background behind that conversation. This is the third time this season I've kind of quizzed Mick on his future and his contract. Of course, he's, you know, in the final few months of his contract, as we know. First time was very early on in the season. The second time was at the start of this month. I felt it was relevant to bring it up again then, because we were into the January transfer window. And, you know, we're talking about him trying to sign players. I think if I was a player that was trying to be attracted to Ipswich Town, the first question I would ask is, what's the manager's future? Am I still going to be wanted if there's a change of manager in the summer and whatnot? It's been very clear with the recruitment this month that it's all very short-termist in terms of loans and short-term signings. Now read into that what you want in terms of moving players on and perhaps sort of clearing the decks for a new approach in the summer. We might be putting two and two together and coming up with five there. But I wasn't going to go anywhere near the contract Mick future stuff again for a number of weeks, really, to be honest. I felt it was, you know, Mick hasn't given anything away. It didn't feel like it was right to talk about that until perhaps Ipswich's playoff hope was mathematically over. I was going to wait till at least after the Norwich game, if not beyond, to talk about it. And we'd had that conversation in the office, hadn't we, Friday morning? When's the responsible time to start talking to Mick about his future again? Not now was the kind of, the conclusion that we came to. So off I went to Playford Road Friday lunchtime after those discussions. And during the sort of course of his radio interview at the start of the press conference, he sort of voluntarily started talking about his future in a sort of a jokey way. But on three occasions, he kind of just threw it out there. You know, when talking about Bartosz Białkowski's contract, you know, he was asked, did Bart ask you about your future before signing his contract? And he sort of quipped, well, I couldn't give Bart a three-month deal, could I? And then the conversation moved on to McGoldrick. Is he the next one to sort a contract out with? And he sort of said, well, he might want to leave with me in the summer. Brenna Woolley rightfully sort of followed that up and said, well, I can't remember what the follow-up was, but
wouldn't it be prudent for the club to it's not about that, he may well want to leave, but shouldn't the club be talking if you want to keep him?
And again, the response was that he might want to walk out of here hand in hand with me through the Golden Gates this summer. And couldn't just leave that hanging there, you know. Three times he sort of brought that up, and
with a grin on his face, we must say he knew what he was saying. It wasn't a slip. He was quite.
He knows
what he's saying.
As Mick said himself, he's been in the game 25 years now. He's done enough of these press conferences. I don't know how much thought is it a Freudian slip, or is it something that he'd carefully thought about and had always planned just to chuck into the press conference. I don't know, but. It was my job to, you know, I wouldn't have been doing my job had I not followed it up. I tried to just ask very straight, open questions. Does he want to be Ipswich Town manager beyond this season? And he has he spoken to Marcus Evans yet about his future? Everything was just met with a, I'm not prepared to talk about that answer. So it seemed a little strange to me that he kind of brought up the subject of his future, but then wouldn't entertain any further questions on it. I don't think we're gonna get any more clarity on the issue for a number of more weeks yet. Now, you know, at the moment he's talking about, you know, focusing on still going for the playoffs and all the rest of it. But as the weeks go by, I think that's, you know, clearly going to become less and less likely. The gap's now 8 points. I don't think anyone realistically thinks that this Ipswich injury hit. Underfunded Ipswich Town side is going to suddenly put together a momentous run for the playoffs. So as that becomes increasingly less likely, and you know the Norwich game gets out of the way, which is really all that there is left to play for now, finishing above Norwich and beating Norwich, sadly. So when all those issues are put to one side, there's only going to be one story in town, and that's, is Mick McCarthy going to stay or go? Because everything else, transfers, contracts, is intrinsically linked to Mick and his future. And I think it's only right and fair that Ipswich Town fans are kept in the picture, because season ticket renewal time will be coming up again soon. Be very interested to see what they do on a pricing structure, if they've learnt from the own goal of putting them up last year and what they'll do with that. But that's normally around early March time. And I think, you know, surely it needs the, you know, what's happening with Mick needs to be communicated to the fans before then, because how can they expect people to commit and renew with so much uncertainty surrounding Mick?
Exactly. We'll talk again, Stu. I'm sure this
yeah,
will
yeah, we're going to have the same conversation week after week, and it's very difficult for us to put more meat on the bone, but all we can do is sort of keep asking the questions and see what answers we get. But I'm not sure we're going to get any for a number more weeks yet.
Should we finish up with another entry to our room 101, Stu?
Yes, please.
Yep. Last week we pitted rubbish half-time games sparked by Score Through the Door, which wasn't in evidence this week.
No, it wasn't.
Maybe they were listening, because it won 52% to 48% for short sleeves and gloves. So in goes rubbish half-time games, which is generally kicking the ball in a gap, door, skip, cruise liner, any of them. This week, Stu, what are you going for?
This week, I'm going for half and half scarves. Doesn't really need much more explanation, really, does it? I can just about allow them for cup finals, momentous games, so, you know, European games or a non-league side playing Man United in the Cup. I can just about abide them then. I can understand that. But now they're churning them out for run-of-the-mill league games. You know, they're churning them out for Leicester versus Stoke in a Premier League match. And they're just for... I guess they're catering for the football tourists that go to one game a year and you know, want to pick up something for the occasion. But
I would say any scarf that has a picture of Tony Pulis on it is not a scarf that needs to have been made. And that's I don't know if, and I've seen them, they exist.
They exist.
Yeah, but this was when he was at West Brom. I don't know if half and half scarves dip into the Championship, but when he was at West Brom, there was I think it was Pulis against Ranieri.
Right.
That famous footballing battle.
Why would you buy a scarf with a manager's face on with the turnover of managers these days? It could be out of date a week later, couldn't it? So, half and half scarves, don't get them. Not for me.
We'll put this on our Twitter page for the vote as usual. But my entry this week is the FA Cup TV schedule. I'll be honest, this particular round of FA Cup games, the TV lot have done okay. They've picked the right games. They had Newport, they had Yeovil against Man United, Newport against Tottenham. They had them on the TV. But why are we being made to watch West Brom v Stoke in the FA Cup? We seem to be bringing up West Brom and Stoke as an example for all of these. Maybe they should go in the room 101. But those games don't need to be on the TV in the FA Cup. It has happened. That game has been televised in the FA Cup, and it doesn't need to get it off.
Yeah, I think last year it was particularly evident, wasn't it? That debate came up where there was a whole load of potential giant killing magic of the FA Cup type ties that were overlooked, and they stick in, like you say, an all Premier League clash. I think, was there a stat that Manchester United, I think up until very recently, had every FA Cup game televised for something like 20 years.
Yeah,
or, you know,
I think it was their game with Derby this year that wasn't.
Yeah.
And that ended this.
And that's clearly just for, you know, a global television audience, isn't it? And it's, you know, it's another... The FA Cup gets a kick in every year. And listen, some of the stories over the weekend with Newport and Wigan and others is a reminder that there is still something about the FA Cup. But, you know, the whole televised games thing is just another little knock for what the FA Cup has been, along with kickoff times and semi-finals at Wembley and all the rest of it. So I'm firmly with you on this one.
We seem to agree with each other on all of the ones we put forward. Should we just chuck the lot in? Who knows?
Football's going to just end up being in there soon. We do like football, really. We should reiterate that. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll talk VAR at some point as well, once I understand what it's actually all about. Right, Stu, I think that's enough of us for this week. Thanks, everyone, for listening as usual. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, you can listen on Audioboom, through our websites. We're everywhere. You can read what we're writing online, some stuff on YouTube as well. We are literally everywhere. Thanks for listening, thanks for watching, thanks for reading.